The views expressed on the following broadcasts do not necessarily reflect those of KHLT, Take 12 Radio, or our affiliates. The opinions on this show should not be considered as medical, psychological, or professional advice and are those of the host, co-host, and guest. Take 12 Radio and KHLT Recovery Broadcasting are not affiliated with any particular 12-step fellowship.
One day at a time with its failures and fears. Portion of pain and burden of care, we must meet.
Welcome to Walking Through the Language of the Heart, a journey into the grapevine writings of Alcoholics Anonymous co-founder Bill W. And now, here are your co-hosts, Chris S. and the Monty Man.
Welcome back, one and all. Sorry we weren't here last week. You know, when you get our age, I don't know if I want to drag Chris into it or not.
You can.
Sometimes you have to have procedures done. We'll just put it that way. Procedures done on kind of a sort of regular basis just to make sure that everything's working okay. And I had one of those things I had to do, and so we weren't here last week. But we're back on track now. Everything's good health-wise, and we're raring to go. And we are on episode 65 of Walking Through the Language of the Heart.
Wow.
Monty,
I knew this was going to take a while when we started, but we've been at this, it has to be a year and a half now.
Yeah. Oh, I love it.
I do too.
Yeah, I
look forward to it. So tonight we're going to be reading an article Bill wrote called Take Step 11. And it was written in June 1958. And this is one I'm really looking forward to because, you know, personally, Step 11, there's nothing that's been more instrumental in broadening and deepening my relationship with the divine than the practice in Step 11. So this is going to be really interesting tonight.
All right. So many people, you know, we have so many opinions and viewpoints within our 12-step fellowships. And sometimes it's cause for concern. Most of the time it's entertaining. And it's always good. Even ones that I don't agree with. I would have to say that I learn more from people that don't see eye to eye with me on issues than I do people that will just parrot what I say. You know what I'm saying? And so when it comes to steps 10, 11, and 12, I'm one of these guys, I don't necessarily think you have to work the 12 steps every year and all that. If you're living in 10, 11, and 12, then you're applying and implementing those spiritual principles on a regular basis. And so you don't need to do that. How about you?
You know, I believe that more today than I used to, because I'm living in 10, 11, 12 more today. And it's been a long time since I've seen the need for going through, you know, step one through step 12. But for a period of time, I was so poor at the practice of step 10 and 11 that I would need what Bill would describe as an annual house cleaning.
Sure.
But I think as this whole process becomes a way of life, and numbers, you know, start not to matter as much as the behavior you're exhibiting in your life. I agree with you. I absolutely do. So let's see what Bill says about this. When it comes to the practice of AA's Step 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out, I am sure I am still very much in the beginner's class. I'm almost a case of arrested development. You know, this is another example of Bill's humility.
Sure.
He so was not ever going to put himself on a pedestal as, you know, as a perfect example of all this stuff, or learn from me, you know, as I do this.
Yeah.
He was so adverse to that. So it doesn't surprise me he's saying that, but I'll bet you anything he was killing it, you know, with step 10 and 11. Anyway, around me, I see many people who make a far better job of relating themselves to God than I do. Certainly, it mustn't be said that I haven't made any progress at all over the years. I simply confess that I haven't made the progress that I might have made, my opportunities being what they have been and still are. My 24th AA anniversary is just ahead. I haven't had a drink in all this time. In fact, I've scarcely been tempted at all. This is some evidence that I must have taken and ever since maintained step one. We admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. Step one was easy for me. Then, at the very beginning, I was fortunate enough to receive a tremendous spiritual awakening and was instantly made conscious of the presence of God and restored to sanity, at least so far as alcohol is concerned. Therefore, I've had no difficulty with AA Step 2 because, in my case, its content was an outright gift. Step 4 and Step 5, dealing with self-survey and confession of one's defects, have not been overly difficult either. So he's basically saying he had a really easy time with the first five steps. You know, you know as well as I do, I bumped into somebody last night. I do a treatment center commitment, and this person came running up to me and wanted to tell me point blank, I've never talked to them before, wanted to tell me point blank that step four scared them to death, and they don't think they should go anywhere near it because it's going to dredge up a bunch of stuff.
Yeah, I've heard that.
And a lot of times you do hear that, right, Monty?
Yeah, I've heard people say that. In fact, I heard someone recently say that their drug and alcohol counselor suggested that they avoid it because it's just going to stir stuff that they've already dealt with. And I was like, wow, oh, okay.
That's kind of an oxymoron, you know. It's going to stir up stuff they've already dealt with. Well, there's nothing to stir up if you've dealt with it.
I know, right?
Yeah. Oh, man. Listen, I have an enormous amount of respect for the people that get into addiction and alcoholism treatment.
Sure.
As a profession. It's very low paid. It's very hard work. It's not as much fun as it looks.
Mm-mm.
You know, you think you're just going to go from an AA meeting into a job and make money, and it's not. But there are some misinformed people who are treating us for alcoholism out there. I'll say that, you know. Just because a counselor says something, don't always believe it. You know, back it up with your own experience. Back it up with some time-tested recovery literature is what I would say.
Yeah, I agree.
You know. Of course, my self-analysis has frequently been faulty. Sometimes I've failed to share my defects with the right people. At other times, I've confessed their defects rather than my own. And at still other times, my confession of defects has been more in the nature of loud complaints about my circumstances and my problems. Wow. You know, I've never heard a bad fist step described like that, but I've heard steps like that, haven't you, Monty?
Yeah.
You know? One of the things I do today is when I'm hearing a fist step, I ask them to really set aside the commentary.
Yeah.
You know, so someone will have a resentment against somebody. Now, let me tell you a little bit about this somebody, you know, it's Uncle
right.
Harry, and, you know, I've known it. And they'll give you about 10 minutes of that. And then they'll go, now I'm going to read the resentment. They read the resentment. And now I'm going to tell you why, you know, that resentment, you know, blah, 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 blah. And what they're doing is they're taking the wind out of the sails of the spiritual exercise
yeah.
of admitting admitting
yeah.
your faults.
Yeah.
You know, they're half justifying it. And so I'll ask the people to really keep the color commentary to a minimum. And normally that doesn't stop them either. you know what I mean?
It is a challenge. It's like trying to slow down a locomotive with a rubber band. I mean, they get going and you say, okay, hold on a minute. Now, who are we talking? We talking about you? Or are we talking about them? Oh, yeah. Okay. And then a couple sentences in, bam, right back to it. So it's kind of an art to learn how to reel folks back in to get to the point, you know.
Yeah, the exercise is admitting your faults. It's not like trying to make the person that's listening like you.
Right.
you know. So again, all of us when we're doing this are gonna you know stretch out into tangents we really shouldn't be. And a good sponsor will try very kind and very compassionately try to direct you back into getting to the point. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Nevertheless, I think I've usually been able to make a fairly thorough and searching job of finding and admitting my personal defects. So far as I know, there isn't at this moment a single defect or current problem of mine which hasn't been discussed with my close advisors. Yet this pretty well-ventilated condition is nothing for self-congratulation. Long ago, I was lucky enough to see that I'd have to keep up my self-analysis or else blow my top completely. Though driven by stark necessity, this continuous self-revelation to myself and to others was rough medicine to take. But years of repetition has made the job far easier. Step 9, making restitutions for harms done, has fallen into much the same bracket. Mm. I love that. He says the more that we admit our defects of character, our shortcomings, and the more we make amends for the wrongs that we've caused, the easier it's going to get, the more it's going to become rote, and it's going to become part of our new spiritual way of life. That's really, really good news. Because I know the first time I did a fist bump, I know the first bunch of amends I did were really, really hard. So I like what he says there.
Were they received well the first ones you did?
Yes. I mean, you know, even the ones that weren't ended up being really positive. Like I remember making amends to going into to see my old boss. My last 2 years of drinking was, you know, I worked for this guy, and he's like, "Oh, what are you doing here? I don't have time for this. Get out of here. You know, go away. I'm busy. I'm working." You know, he like kicked me out of his office. And the second time I went back, you know, same thing. "Oh, you again? Well, you know, I don't know what you're trying to do, but I don't have time for it." Rah, 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 rah. You know. But what happened was I walked into a barbershop to get my hair cut, and he was sitting in there waiting to get his hair cut, Monty, and I sat down next to him and I got it done. And we mended fences. He ended up doing jobs for me, and we were cool, you know, like the scale had been tipped to a balance.
Yeah, that's nice.
And that was like the worst amends I had, you know, and it ended up good. So,
yeah.
I'm really into all this. In step 12, carrying the AA message to others, I've found little else than great joy. We alcoholics are folks of action, and I'm no exception. When action pays off as it does in AA, it's small wonder that step 12 is the most popular, and for most of us, the easiest one of all. I think, Monty, you and I do the 12 step, and we're not even conscious that we're doing the 12 step. It's just about being available,
yep.
you know, for other human beings.
Yep.
You know what I mean?
Yep.
I'm not like checking off my 12-step box.
Right. It's exciting.
Anyway.
It's exciting. I got to tell you, it's a lot of fun. I'm going. I think I mentioned to you. I'm going up to Portland on the 8th, 9th, and 10th to take part in the Came to Recovery retreat up there.
Nice.
You know, that the one they do with Clarence Snyder's book, and they do
sure.
all 12 steps in 3 days, with the exception of 9, of course. And I'm able to take a couple of my sponsees with me and one of my co-hosts. So just doing that, being with those guys and going through this in a little different way than what they've used to going through it with me, it's fun. I am looking forward to it. I had a buddy of mine say to me, he goes, you like that? That's fun doing that? I go, yeah, it's a hoot, man. It really is.
It's a lot more fun than it looks. So there's a guy who was sponsored by Clarence named Mitch Kay. Okay. He's from my area. He's from the Northeast. And he wrote a book called How It Worked. Okay. And, uh-huh. and he wrote this based on, you know, all the conversations that he'd had with Clarence Snyder. And it was published back in the 90s, right? And then it went out of print for a long time. You can now get it again. It was going on eBay for hundreds of dollars, you know, when it was out of print. But it's back in print now, and I know Mitch, and after you go through that retreat, you might want to check it out. It's probably yeah. the most cohesive, you know, explanation of the Clarence Snyder method.
Yeah.
And it really was closely aligned. You know, Clarence did some things that Bill sure didn't do, and did some things that Dr. Bob didn't even do. But it's interesting historically because, you know, Clarence got sober in the 30s and he lasted until, you know, the late 80s or something. You know, he was just one of those guys that lived a long time.
Yeah. Yeah. Cool.
So anyway, this little sketch of my own Pilgrim's Progress is offered to illustrate where I and maybe lots of other AAs have still been missing something of top importance. Through lack of disciplined attention and sometimes through lack of the right kind of faith, many of us keep ourselves year after year in the rather easy spiritual kindergarten I've just described. But almost inevitably, we become dissatisfied. We have to admit we have hit an uncomfortable, maybe a very painful sticking point. 12-stepping, talking at meetings, recitals of drinking histories, confessions of our defects and what progress we have made with them no longer provide us with the released and the abundant life. Our lack of growth is often revealed by an unexpected calamity or a big emotional upset. Perhaps we hit the financial jackpot and are surprised that this solves almost nothing, that we are still bored and miserable notwithstanding. You know, he's talking about, you know, a sober bottom. He's talking about a plateau. Many of us experience this, Monty, where there just doesn't feel like there's continued growth. It doesn't feel like we're getting out of all of this stuff what we used to get out of it. And it's just a blank spot. The mistake you can make when you get into this is to stop doing the things that you're
right.
doing.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yep. You got to do it anyway. You just do. You know, I appreciate Dr. Berger's book, 12 Essential Insights Toward Emotional Sobriety. And the tagline is getting your recovery unstuck. We do. We get to that place where it's like we hit a desert experience. You know, we get a dry spot. It's like, is this all there is? And the all is quite a bit, but we minimize it. Because we've forgotten from whence we came sometimes.
And it's not just with AAs, you know.
No.
The Dark Night of the Soul, you know that book, right?
Yes.
It was
yes.
written by St. John of the Cross or whatever. He talks about being in that wasteland where he doesn't feel the presence of God. And that's all he's been doing his whole life is spiritual practices to get close to God. And it just happens, but the one mistake you can make is to stop chopping wood and carrying water.
Yeah.
You know?
Yep.
As we usually don't get drunk on these occasions, our bright-eyed friends tell us how well we're doing. But inside, we know better. We know we aren't doing well enough. We still can't handle life as life is. There must be a serious flaw somewhere in our spiritual practice and development. What then is it? The chances are better than even that we shall locate our troubles in our misunderstanding or neglect of AA Step 11, prayer, meditation, and the guidance of God. The other steps can keep most of us sober and somehow functioning, but Step 11 can keep us growing if we try hard and work at it continually. If we expend even 5% of the time on Step 11 that we habitually and rightly lavish on Step 12, the results can be wonderfully far-reaching. That is an almost uniform experience of those who constantly practice Step 11. You know, that's an interesting paragraph. I know a bunch of speakers, you know, they're you know, convention style speakers,
yeah,
who take a year off. They rotate out, right? I'm not going to be speaking this year. Instead, I'm going to be really digging in to Step 11. And you know, and that makes a lot of sense. I have not done that, but I have really thought about doing that. You know, taking a year off just for, you know, the total house cleaning, where you know I focus like crazy on 10, 11, and 12.
You know, you know, Chris, just about every spiritual leader and giant, you hear their stories. They do that. You know, they take sabbaticals, they go off in the wilderness, you know, some very literally, fasting and praying and it can be a very dry experience, but sometimes in those desert experiences is where we grow the most. I love what he says here. He says, but Step 11 can keep us growing. You know, 10 and 11 and 12 have been referred to as maintenance steps, but I challenge that, because if that's all you're doing is maintaining a 57 Chevy, you're never taking it out of the garage, you're just waxing it every day, you know, what? Someday you're going to start that thing, it ain't going to start. You know, so continuing to grow steps is what I think these three are, more than maintenance.
You know, I love what you said about, you know, about solitude. And so a group of people that I've kind of, you know, amateurishly studied are the Desert Fathers.
Yes.
Right. They really are the people who built what, you know, the philosophical construct of Christianity today, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. But they're just very interesting. They went all in, the mystics, right?
Yes.
And I read a book not long ago that was really fascinating. It was called The Solace of Fierce Landscapes. Mm. And it's this guy who's incredibly devout, you know, Christian, you know, loves God like crazy. And he studied all great revelations in religious history, and like Moses going up on the mountain,
right?
You know, Jesus going up on the, like it's either a desert or it's a mountain, these fierce landscapes.
Yeah.
And what happens out in them, you know, is revelatory. So, you know, God can be in the quiet, fierce landscapes.
Yes,
and it was a fascinating book. And while he's going on all these sojourns, his mother is dying, and he's having to take care of his mother. And it's a long, protracted illness where he really had to do everything for her for years, something that would just wear any of us out.
Wow.
And so he's got that on the left, and he's got, you know, the studies of the Desert Fathers on the right. And it was kind of a fascinating book. Anyway, it says, in this article, I'd like to develop Step 11 further. For the benefit of the complete doubter, the unlucky one who can't believe it has any real merit at all. In lots of instances, I think that people find their first great obstacle in the phrase, God as we understand him. The doubter is apt to say, on the face of it, nobody can understand God. I half believe that there is a first cause or something, and maybe a somebody. But I can't get any further than this. I think people are kidding themselves when they say they can. Even if there were a somebody, why should he bother with little me when in making the cosmos run, he already has plenty to do? You know, God's keeping Saturn on his axis, Monty. He's not really worried about, you know, me and my job. As for the folks who can claim that God tells them where to drill for oil or when to brush their teeth, well, they just make me tired. Our friend is clearly one who believes in some kind of God, God as he understands him, but he doesn't believe any bigger in any bigger concept or a better feeling about God to be possible. So he looks upon meditation, prayer, and guidance as the means of self-delusion. Now, what can our hard-pressed friend do about this? You know, many people are, you know, they have a little bit of faith.
Yeah.
You know, they don't have enough faith to cross to shore yet, but they've got some faith. So he's going to give them some advice. Well, he can strenuously try meditation, prayer, and guidance just as an experiment. He can address himself to whatever God he thinks there is, or if he thinks there is none, he could admit, just for experimental purposes, that he might be wrong. This is all important. As soon as he is able to take this attitude, it means that he has stopped playing God himself. His mm-hmm. mind has opened. Like any good scientist in his laboratory, our friend can assume a theory and pray to a higher power that may exist and may be willing to help and guide him. He keeps on experimenting, in this case praying, for a long time. Again, he tries to behave like the scientist and experimenter who is never supposed to give up so long as there is a vestige of any chance of success. As he goes along with his process of prayer, he begins to add up the results. If he persists, he will almost surely find more serenity, more tolerance, less fear, less anger. He will acquire a quiet courage, the kind that doesn't strain him. He can look at so-called failure and success for what they really are. Problems and calamity will begin to mean instruction instead of destruction. He will feel freer and saner. The idea that he may have been hypnotizing himself by auto-suggestion will become laughable. His sense of purpose and of direction will increase. His tensions and anxieties will commence to fade. His physical health is likely to improve. Wonderful and unaccountable things will start to happen. Twisted relations in his family and on the outside will unaccountably improve. You know, just like in the steps, he's laying off on a bunch of promises for us. Mm-hmm. You know, these are really 11-step promises mm-hmm. that aren't in the big book, Monty.
Yeah, this is a great three paragraphs to read somebody who is struggling in this area. This is excellent.
I think so. And I think I know where he got this. Frank Buchman, who was the principal founder of the Oxford Group, mm-hmm. used to do an experiment with people. For people that didn't believe in God, he would have them pray every single day, three or four times a day, acting like they did. And over the course of time, they would come to believe. Mm. And I think Bill might have gotten gotten a little bit of that from Frank Buchman.
Guys find it easier to relinquish that there is a God, they're not it, when they realize that it's okay as they are coming to understand. It's okay. And so that's what I say, because a lot of people, especially my Christian friends, oh, you guys tell them that they can make God out of anything. No, that's not what we're saying. There's a big misunderstanding there.
That's true. That's true. And all is well. I mean, when you start to really believe all is well, you're so well on your way.
Oh my gosh.
To this spiritual experience that they want you to have and connection to God and the divine.
Yeah. Amen.
Even if few of these things happen, he will still find himself in possession of great gifts. When he has to deal with hard circumstances, he can face them and accept them. He can now accept himself and the world around him. He can do this because he now accepts a God who is all, who loves all. When he now says, "Our Father who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name," our friend deeply and humbly means it. When in good meditation and thus freed from the clamors of the world, he knows that he is in God's hand, that his own destiny is really secure, here and hereafter. A great theologian once declared, "The chief critics of prayer are those who have never really tried it enough." That's good advice. Good advice I'm trying to take even more seriously for myself. Many AAs have long been striving for a better conscious contact with God, and I trust that many more of us will presently join with that wise company. I've just finished rereading the chapter on step 11 in our book, 12 Steps and 12 Traditions. It was written almost 5 years ago. I was astonished when I realized how little time I had actually been given to my own elementary advice on meditation, prayer, and guidance, practices that I had so earnestly recommended to everybody else. You know, I always knew Bill was telling us to do stuff he wasn't doing himself. I always knew that. Didn't you, Monty?
Oh, yeah, of course.
You know?
Yeah.
And I'm sure he, you know, just like this, he's admitting it. In this lack of attention, I probably have plenty of company. But I do know that this is a neglect that can cause us to miss the finest experiences of life, a neglect that can seriously slacken the growth that God hopes we may achieve right here on earth, here in this great day, at school, this very first of our Father's many mansions.
Mm, I love it.
So he's saying the first of God's many mansions is school. That's what we're in right now, Monty.
You know, in step five, where it talks about, in the big book, where it talks about how important it is not to skip this vital step, right? And that sometimes people only think they've done it. And then they found out later that because they hadn't done it, they got themselves in trouble. You know, I don't want to minimize any of the other steps because I think it's important we don't skip any of them. But here's another example of one that lots of times people, it's a little too deep for them. They just don't want to investigate it. So let's just move on to step 12 and I'll work with people. And that's a dangerous game to be playing because what I've found is people will get so caught up in doing healthy stuff that they lose themselves, you know, that the service works, burns them out. The sponsees that they have are beginning to annoy them to the point where they walk away from them. And pretty soon we don't see them anymore. And you look and you look back at their application of 10 and 11 and you go, there was none. You know, the other part, Chris, is you get people that have come out of a strong faith background, have come into the rooms of the 12-steppers, and think because they've got a strong faith background, they don't need to improve on it. And we lose them too.
I so agree. Listen, Monty, next week is The Language of the Heart. That's going to be a very, very interesting essay. And it's going to be a two-parter too, because it's like, you know, eight giant pages. So that'll be part one and part two, I think.
Nice. All right. Thank you, my friend. Another great show. And we will see you all next week. Don't forget, though, you can actually listen to a bunch of us jatter-yock and talk about recovery and stuff at take12radio.com. We've got literally, Chris, we have thousands of broadcasts. I cannot believe how many we have. Yeah. That are out there, all for fun and for free. All right. Until next time, this is the Monty Man along with Chris and the rest of the Take 12 Recovery Radio family, and we are wishing God's perfect serenity for each and every one of you. For more recovery workshops with Chris S. and the Monty Man, visit our website at take12radio.com and click on the Recovery Workshops banner.
This has been a broadcast of Take 12 Recovery Radio and KHLT Recovery Broadcasting.
This has been a Chicken and a Pig production.
Kitty, 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 kitty. Meow, meow, meow.
Woof, woof.